people got into their business, whatever that service business is, because they wanted to provide a service to the world.
The root of the problem, the failure rate of chiropractors for paying back their loans is around 50%.
Wow.
I cannot tell you how many chiropractors I meet in restaurants because they're my server. Or servicing me, like in the AT&T, I met somebody the other day, I was there, and he was like, I used to be a chiropractor. Because they come out exactly that, disempowered, disillusioned, and not taught the basics.
Hey guys, JB here in the Wolf's Den. Great guest today. Very interesting angle here on sales and persuasion. One of the things that I always say is that people miss the point that sales is not just for traditional salespeople, as if you're selling a product like a car, insurance policy. They're all in sales. It doesn't matter what you do. Well, that actually applies directly to professionals like doctors, dentists, chiropractors, masseuses, anybody who's really in business providing a service to someone else. You have to be a closer. You have to know how to essentially communicate what you have, the value of what you're offering in a way that connects with your patients or the people that you're providing a service to and makes them not just want to buy from you, but also come back again and again and also recommend you to their friends. Well, this couple here, we have Dr. Lacey Book and Dr. Dill, is it? Sean Dill, right?
Yes.
Sean Dill, right? They actually do just that. And that's what I think is really, really cool. They're focusing on the sales side of the equation, but to service provide. So how does a doctor or a chiropractor or a dentist or a masseuse really go out and monetize what they're great at? They have a great service to provide. So here they are. They're right in front of me. How are you guys?
Fantastic.
Great.
And I
Fantastic.
Think that what you're doing is awesome because I think there's this huge miss out there that like, okay, great. You're a chiropractor, you're a doctor, but you know what? You still got to communicate. And I think there's this sort of unspoken, like uncomfortability they naturally have because like, wait a second, I went to medical school. I shouldn't have to, right? So, and interestingly enough, before I ask you the first question, I want to frame it like this. I always say, you know, I said the best example of a great salesperson in any industry is one that takes the position of almost like the friendly family physician. So like, so tell me, you know, before you, when you go, you're sick or you go to the doctor, he'll ask you questions. He'll say, okay, tell me what, you know, how long has it been bothering you for? How long does it go back? Blah, blah, blah. And then when he's done asking questions, he'll say, well, based on what you said to me, here is the solution in the form of a prescription, a procedure, whatever, a change in lifestyle. So on some level, it really is a very traditional sale.
Yes.
In the sense that they have to, like, you know, they ask questions, identify pain points, you know, needs, whatever it might be, and then they resolve it with some sort of product or procedure, right? So it is traditional sales, just it's selling health and wellness, so to speak, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what you guys do. Let's dig in straight away. What do you think is the cause of this? I think we all agree with some inherent uncomfortability of most providers of what you do. They're like, I'm not in sales. What do you think that comes from?
Service.
Yeah.
Right? So
the struggle is real.
And providers went to school to provide a service to the world. And they feel like my calling is to go out in the world and help the world. And I shouldn't have to sell it. And as soon as I start selling it, then I'm selling out the service.
I'm cheapening myself.
Yes. Yeah.
And people should just want what I have. I shouldn't really have to tell people or sell it because people should just want it. Don't people want to be healthy? Why am I advertising? Why am I marketing? Why should I have to convince you to do what I want you to do?
Sure. Okay. And that's a valid. So that's one aspect. All right. I guess the answer is though, because there are many people provide the same service. So how do people know who, you know, why should I choose you? You know, like if you're not the only doctor, not the only chiropractor, right?
Right.
And also I think human beings naturally are skeptical. Like they want to have that. I mean, I guess the point is that we should substitute the word sales for effective communication.
Right.
So what do you think that uncomfortability is all about? Like that's the idea that like, I can't be selling to people. What do you think that's about? Where does it start?
Well, I think they have a big heart for service, right? So people got into their business, whatever that service business is, because they wanted to provide a service to the world. And the idea that they have to sell it, that's a hard thing for them. Like, I feel like I should just say, hey, I basically hang my shingle. I'm a doctor, I'm a dentist, and people are going to come and see me just because I said. Sure. And the idea that I have to sell it is uncomfortable. You know, one of the things that, you know, Lacey and I are super passionate about is that we believe that probably the best artists, clinicians, musicians, people that provide services are unknown because they refuse to market or sell.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Woo! All right, guys, time for one of my oldie but goodies here. For our sponsors, Blue Chew, the people that make you get erect. Okay, guys, listen, this is my favorite of all in terms of, you know, what makes you an animal in bed, right? You know, the old stuff, the little blue meanie pills. Well, guess what? Blue Chew has perfected the art of really helping you have the ultimate sexual experience. You could have an erection with Blue Chew. And they have the short acting, like, you know, 3-4 hours and the whole little weekend formulation, right? Your dick could be so hard. It's like a battering ram, literally, that will knock down a crack house door. I've said that before. I stand by my words. This is not normal stuff. It is awesome. It is by a doctor, U.S. physician, will make sure that it's safe for you. You're getting it made in a U.S. pharmacy, so you're not going overseas with ineffective stuff, by the way. You want to check this out right now, and here's the deal. This company, Blue Chew, they're so confident in their product. It is awesome, by the way, okay, that you get to try it for free. That's right. You just pay the shipping and handling. Let me give you the exact details here. You go to BlueChew.com. Your first order is free when you use the promo code WOLF. Just pay $5 shipping and handling. That's it. It's BlueChew.com/WOLF. Again, they have the short acting. They have the weekend formula, all right? Have some wild sex on Blue Chew. Take care. Woo. You know, it's funny. I actually agree with you on so many levels. For instance, my parents, right? Brilliant, hardworking, educated, both of them CPAs, and we were broke as a family growing up. Why? They thought selling and marketing was evil. So what did they do? They just worked for other people. They did taxes on the side for one friend, and they would never consider marketing their services, right? Yet they had so much value to offer. So I think one of the things that I've tried to help people with when that feel that way is, say, well, maybe you can't look at it like as sales. It's how about just a communication, effective communication. Mm-hmm. So great analogy. When I first wrote my book number one, The Wolf of Wall Street, right? I went to the publisher, it was Random House, and the actual publisher himself was a man named Irwin Applebaum, who was like a freaking dead ringer for Alfred Hitchcock. This guy was a big boy.
It's a great name too, though. I mean, really.
This guy was like the guy. He was like a legend in the book world, right? And he was this really big, you know, soft-spoken guy with the kind of gray beard, like a sage guy. Like, you just thought the guy was going to, like, smart shit would just come out of his mouth. That sort of guy, right? And he looks at me, we're talking about my book, blah, 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 blah. He goes, just remember one thing about the book industry. He says, people don't buy books. They get sold to them. And I was so shocked coming from this guy who looked like he was anything but a sales-oriented guy. But the point was, is that it doesn't matter how good something might be. People have to be made aware of it, which to me is like the marketing side, is actually creating awareness. And then someone's got to say, hey, let me tell you why you would enjoy this, why this has value, why we think you'll connect with it. So even an industry as boring as books, they were keenly aware of that without the sales side, right? So what you guys do is you market to that group of people, essentially. You essentially provide value to them by saying, okay, you've all worked really hard. You spent all these years to learn a skill that can benefit people. Let me show you now how to essentially explain the value that you have to your patients in a way that connects with them, and they'll essentially also purchases the service that they agree to the treatments, right? So as a chiropractor, you do a lot of chiropractors?
Yeah, lots of chiropractors, lots of people in the healthcare professions, for sure.
So what would you give an example here from the way you teach them, is what would be a way that you would like say to a patient, if you're a chiropractor, like, you know, I want you to, like, it doesn't really make sense to like just get adjusted once, right? To really do this right, you really need to have like a 12-week program here, and it's like sort of a longer term thing to buy for a package deal, right? Is that kind of one of the things you would try to get them to do?
Absolutely. And you know, clearly we are longtime students of straight line system, right? And so, you know, pre-qualifying, something that they don't like to do, like on the phone, people ask questions like, how much does it cost? How long do I have to go? They ask, do you take insurance?
Oh, and the answer, like, you got to love this, because the answer is always, it depends. That's right. Like the worst sales process on the planet.
It just depends.
That's what they say on, like, pre-qualifying in the health industry is almost non-existent. So this concept is very out of the box for them.
So part of what you teach someone is your service, like your method is, like, from the first moment that phone rings, that's where the relationship begins, right? When they even,
and maybe even before.
Yeah.
Right? Because through the marketing process, maybe we've met networking, you know, people ask, right? Like, you know, hey, so you're a chiropractor. Right there, if somebody asks me a question, you know, why do you ask? And I begin that process of diving into, what are you looking for? What are your needs? Maybe you're asking for a friend. Maybe you're asking for a family member. Maybe you're asking for yourself. Mm-hmm. And then the process of how I would qualify that and then move eventually into the sales is going to differ based on what you're asking, based on how long have you had your situation, what's going on, what I think. You know what? This is what happens in the healthcare world. People think that they can't issue any criteria whatsoever unless you've come in and I've done a full-blown physical exam and I've figured everything out. And, you know, when we began talking about medical doctors doing, you know, questioning and then coming up with their recommendations.
That's some triage though, right? Right.
Right. But like a form of consultative selling, right? That's really, in essence, what it is.
Yeah.
Why can't that process begin even through marketing, right? Because you're marketing headaches or you're marketing back pain or you're marketing cosmetic surgery. So the people that are calling or engaging you necessarily, you know where they're standing. You know kind of what the outcome is that they're trying to achieve. And based off your experience, you know more or less how long this is going to take. It's not like you don't have an idea. And then based off of that, you have more or less an idea of how much it's going to cost. And it's weird how people won't share that, right? Yeah. Like it's a mystery. Like, I can't tell you. It could be $1,000 or it could be $50,000. You have to come in and then I can reveal that to you, right?
Got it. Okay. So lesson number one here for service providers basically is that the sale starts at the first point of contact, whatever that might be. Mm-hmm. Whether it could be on your website, on the videos that you put on your website. It could be when you're just out mingling in mixers or just moving through the world, that when people, you know, these sort of, I guess, these conversation starter moments that you get as a service provider, right? So you actually teach people, it starts like for that first moment, what to say, how to say. Does it start right there?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And then, of course, you know, building rapport, right? Because it's not, a lot of times too, we're so passionate about what we do. And so we only have the capability of talking about one thing.
Right.
Right. So it's like, you say anything. You say, well, I was playing tennis and my shoulder, and I go right to, I can help you, I'm a chiropractor.
I'm a chiropractor.
Versus having a conversation with another human being who is experiencing some sort of a physical ailment and who may have other options on the table.
Sure. Yeah. So that's like the example of almost like when you're, you know, asking qualifying questions, the rookie mistake is, oh, I can, case closed.
Pulling the trigger a little too quickly.
Right, exactly. Versus like, tell me, well, really? So I'm, right? Versus sort of amplifying pain, trying to resolve pain while you're asking questions, right?
Yes,
well, one
absolutely.
Of the things that we've always taught too is the 10 out of 10, right?
Right.
10 out of 10 on your service,
right.
10 out of 10 on you, and 10 out of 10 on your company.
Right.
And that, again, is one of those out-of-the-box things because they are so passionate about their service. All they know how to do is to talk about the service.
So just for those of you who are not familiar with straight-line terminology, what she's talking about is something very, very important and very accurate, is that we call this the 10s are a certainty scale with a 1 representing kind of absolute uncertainty. They hate your product or the service, don't believe it has value, with the 10 being, oh my God, that's the best service in the world. And I think that never is there probably a more accurate case than in medicine, where it's not just the service, it's also the person delivering. So imagine let's say you believe in chiropractic. So a 1 would be, I think that the actual process of adjustments has no value. That will be a 1. for chiropractic. I think, oh my God, getting adjusted and realigning your spine and so forth, that's the greatest thing in the world. It's going to give me back my hearing, all the stories, whatever yeah. it might be, eliminate my pains. That's a 10. That absolutely certain chiropractic itself is great. That's your first 10. Your second 10 would be that this chiropractor, the person who wants to do it, I trust this person. He's the best at what he does. He's been through the right schooling. He cares about me. Mm-hmm. He's passionate about what he does. He's going to treat me fairly. And it's like, so you connect with the actual service provider. Mm-hmm. How often do you see people when they first get to you that they're completely oblivious of that second 10? They just think it's all about the skill they have and not about themselves. Do you see
the provider?
The provider.
All the time.
They're mostly oblivious, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know why? Is because too, there's what they feel are ethical considerations, that I can't say that I'm better than you. And in many cases, that is true. There might be some legal constraints, right? You can't hold yourself out that way.
But that doesn't preclude the fact that you can still sell yourself.
Absolutely.
Right?
But that's what stops them. And they don't feel comfortable talking about their accomplishments, their achievements, their studies, the extra hours they've put in, sharing testimonials. You know, and there's places around the world, for example, in Australia, where many healthcare providers aren't even allowed to share testimonials, right? Because it's like a form of bragging, and we don't know the veracity of the person and what they're saying. And so there's a lot of effort in the healthcare world to really temper that down.
I'll tell you a personal story to me, which is really relevant here. So I had huge shoulder problems. You probably maybe heard the story. And I went to see two doctors. And the first doctor, I came in with MRIs, X-rays, and a little thing. And the doctor's like a very busy, sort of high-powered surgeon type, right? I walk in there and he's like, oh, Jordan, I seen who I was, right? Puts the thing up. You're fucked. He goes, you need to get your shoulder replaced. And I was so offended by that. All right. And I asked him it replaced. This is back in 2000 and I want to say 11. Okay. 12.
Yeah.
It was my left shoulder. Now I've had my shoulder replaced, but my right shoulder, my left shoulder's still alive and well. We wanted to have my shoulder replaced, and I got really offended. And I walked out really upset. The next day, I had another appointment with a different doctor, and when they asked me to come and put us on an hour and a half. I'm like, oh my, one of those where I'm going to be waiting around. But sure enough, when I go in there, I'm like the only one there, and I go right in, and he's waiting there, and he starts asking me questions, and he did the most in depth. Examination of me, of who I was, how it started, everything about my family history. And then I said, well, you want to see the MRIs? He goes, no. He goes, well, I want to wait till after I examine you, and then the MRIs will confirm what I already know to be true. And I was like, holy shit. I'm like this. And I'm texting my wife, this is the best doctor in the world. He hadn't even done anything yet.
Right.
And I thought he was the single best, and it turned out that he was.
Yeah.
And he actually cured me with my shoulder. It was just some nerve plexus thing I had, and they treated it, right? It was incredible. But I think there's this really, this lack of understanding of service providers, of how important that period of asking questions to people and then really listening to the answers, not, as you say, jumping the gun and saying, I got you covered right now, but really digging out what's causing someone pain, where it really started, and also how they respond when I'm speaking and when someone's like looking at me and I'm really engaged and you could tell that they care and so forth. So when you're doing these boot camps or day camp, or, you know, summer camps.
Summer camps.
I like that better, by the way. I think of like sleepaway camp when I was a kid and going swimming in the lake,
having a good time, causing a ruckus,
sneaking out into the bushes with the girls, from the other side of camp, right? I got thrown out 1 year for that, but anyway, so I always say I could trace back all my problems to women, not your fault. Right?
Okay. Hey,
you guys married, by the way?
We are. You are. Yes.
I had a feeling you are. She's back.
I know. He's getting kicked underneath the table. Right, you've had that happen before, right?
Oh my goodness, no idea. I have to have like an artificial joint.
You have strong shins from all the heels.
Story again, I'm like, story?
What are you talking about?
Like if I say, don't even. Anyway, so getting back to business though, okay? So tell me about these, and I'm actually speaking at your summer camp this year, right? I'm bringing a bathing suit, okay? But tell me the basis of what you teach, right? Is it a formalized program where, like, step by step, where it's divided into, like, you know, like, you know, there's like, you know, 4 chunks or 10 chunks? How do you do it?
Well, so first of all, summer camp, sort of our crown jewel. It's our big yearly event. It's our annual growth conference for service providers. Last year we were in Miami, had around 400 people there.
Wow.
People like Jay Abraham, Roger Love. Yeah,
love
great,
Jay.
Right? This year we have Eric Thomas and okay. yourself.
Right.
We bring in a host of people. We bleed out our speakers over time. So mm-hmm. By the time this hits, you will have been announced as our next keynote.
Right. You're our Christmas present.
You're
to
our
the
Christmas
people
present
that are
to the
coming.
World.
Man, that's nice.
And basically, service providers coming together to learn better strategies for marketing, sales, and then, of course, mindset too, which is a whole other ball of wax.
Yeah. Let's talk about that.
Where, you know, that's a difficult
thing
as well.
So, what do you see the biggest problems with, like, the mindset side?
Money mindset for sure.
And it's not cool to be rich as a
There's
service
shame
provider.
Shame around it. Like,
really?
Service providers actually feel shameful for being rich or making money off of their service.
Because their colleagues think.
Not in LA.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
We
absolutely.
Actually work with doctors yes. in LA that really? Are very shameful for the amount of money.
Well, you've
they
done
make.
A good job because the ones I know are not shameful at yeah. all. Well, at least I'm scared to charge.
Yeah, that's a good thing. I think it's becoming a trend because of insurance. Reimbursement sort of getting tight. Yeah. And so a lot of doctors, most of them that are doing extremely well, have gotten outside of that insurance world, which then if you are not taking third-party reimbursement, then you better know how to sell yeah. because you're going to have to convince somebody to go into their pocket
sure.
and pay for your service. Those people are able to command higher fees because they're not restricted by insurance contracts and whatnot. And they're making a lot of money. But here's what happens is that the other providers look at them and they think you must be doing something shady. I mean, you get it. It doesn't matter any industry. If you're excelling, there are those that are like, you must be cheating. You must be doing something mm-hmm. wrong. I think that's far more prevalent in especially the healthcare world. You must be, you know, doing some insurance fraud. What are you doing? You're doing some, you know, working with lawyers. And so there's a shame that's built around that. And look, even
selling out,
they feel like they sold out.
You're
no longer caring for people. It's not mm-hmm. a service. It's a business, which there's nothing wrong with that because ultimately it is. And healthcare somewhere down the road got divided where the business people took over the insurance and the big pharma
yeah.
and they left the service providers to provide the service, but get basically what was left after they divvied up the dollar.
We teach that a lot. Like you have to be able, if you really want to reach and impact a lot of people, you can't do it broke. There's very few people on the planet that can reach communities and help change lives by not being able to sure. rub two pennies together.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
we've,
yeah.
you know, a lot of us have been there and that's not an easy life to live. So, you know, it's a battle. I think that they battle the idea and the concept of having money and in service in the health world, they call it the business hand and the service heart.
Right.
And so it's like trying to figure out how to balance the two. They struggle with that a lot.
What percentage of people in the chiropractors, doctors, you think went into it for money versus just because they love doing what they're doing? It seems mostly they just love giving value.
I'd say maybe 50-50. And yeah. I think what happens is in school, something happens to you, right? You get indoctrinated because look, anybody who's like, yeah. That tells their family, I'm going to be a doctor, the family at Thanksgiving is probably like, yes, this is going to be great, doctor, lawyer, et cetera. Yep. But I think once you get in school, you begin to be indoctrinated a little bit unconsciously that it's not cool to go out and make a lot of money. You're taking advantage of people. You're taking advantage of the system. Personally, we don't think that's true. Mm-mm. We think that you should be, you know, especially if you're providing a service that's saving people's lives. It's almost like teachers too. Somehow teachers became allocated to not having a very big paycheck. Right.
Which I think is terrible.
It's horrible.
Right. Same thing. You're providing the biggest service to humanity. That's really, again, that's our passion is that people that are making the biggest impact, you know, and you see it on now because we have social media, but you'll see these teachers that, you know, are second grade and they're making a massive impact, but they're making, you know, $30,000-$40,000 a year. It's super sad.
I'll tell you, when I went to, you know, I spent some time in dental school, believe it or not, one day. and the reason why it was one day was exactly what you said. They tried to do that. And so when I got into the school that day, it was orientation and the dean stands up and there's like 105 of us. It was the Baltimore College of Dental Surgery in Maryland, right? And you see this white-haired guy, white jacket, very dental-looking. Like I was like, this is okay so far, right? And he's like, you know, welcome to the College of Dental Surgery here in Baltimore. You should be proud to be here. Dentistry is a wonderful profession, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, all right, so far. And he goes, but let me say this. The golden age of dentistry is over. If you're here to make a lot of money, you're probably in the wrong place. I'm like, what the fuck? I'm in the wrong place. And I got up and I walked out. I dropped out the first day. I was like, this is not for me. But I met a lot of kids that stayed there. They heard that. And the conditioning started right there on day one. Like, if you're here to make money, you're probably not in the right place, you know? I'm like, oh, so I should just want to stick my hands in people's mouths because I like it? It's like, oh, it's like I love cleaning freaking toilet bowls. I mean, like, no, I mean, honestly. Yeah. You got to have some sort of monetary incentive. Now, that being said, I think the truth was that there's a lot of really successful dentists that make a lot of money, and there's others that don't make as much money. It's really up to how you want to approach it as a business. So what you do is show them how to approach it as a business to make money and without sacrificing their integrity or the value they deliver, right? Mm-hmm.
100%.
Right? Yeah, I think one of the things that service professionals get in trouble for is actually what you were talking about earlier. So we've got this idea of 10 out of 10 on the service, then 10 out of 10 on the individual,
right,
and that's where they stop.
Yeah.
And so you go to a doctor's office and it's all built on him and his charisma or her charisma. Yeah. And then what happens? And then what happens when they die?
Yeah.
All those people aren't taken care of. So there's no scalability in a lot of these service professionals because they don't know how to scale a company. They only know how to scale themselves. And that's dangerous, right?
So they're not really building an organization around it. It's really not a culture.
No systems, no processes, no way to do anything.
So you can cover that as well.
Yeah, they're like scripting? What?
Right.
You want me to script my sales conversation out? I mean, that's just...
I'll tell you another great example. It's interesting because I really believe that there's this huge opportunity in this area of service providers not knowing how to close.
Massive.
Yeah. And it's just I went to the dentist once and I tell this is a really funny story. And I had, I had a sinus infection that ended up I had to get this thing called a Colwell lock. They drilled through my top of my sinus. I ended up getting a tooth infection from that. I ended up getting a root canal and the root canal didn't take. I had another. It finally had to get yanked out and they had to replace this tooth. Doc goes, you have two choices. You can either get an implant where they, you know, the screw or some bridge, right? Mm-hmm. Goes, you know, if you go for the implant, you know, it's going to take you 6 months or so. But once it's in there, it's permanent. It's great. But I said, fine, I'll do the implant, right? So the guy does the implant, right? And he puts the screw in. It has to sit. So he puts a temporary tooth, cap over this implant. So it's like... But it's not in that secure and it's not made that well. So it's it kept cracking when I would eat something and it was driving me fucking crazy. I happened to go back to this doctor again and again. And finally, I was so fed up with having to get this cap. I'm like, listen, I said, can't you make this cap out of some super industrial strength titanium alloy? He goes, yeah, well, we got to go to the less. Go to the freaking lab, get it made once, right? So he does that. And the guy goes out and he gets this beautiful titanium temporary, you know, with enamel coat over it, so you wouldn't know, right? He puts it in, the thing fits like a glove, boom, built to last, and that's that, right? So now I'm sitting there with this screw in my mouth, and there's there's the tooth over it, right? And it was the greatest tooth ever. So me, what do I do? I said, well, fuck it. Why should I even finish this?
Right. Keeping the titanium too.
So now I keep the thing in, all right? I'm like, fuck it. And I never get the implant in, right? So I was just sitting there. So this goes years go by. And this thing's really built to last in there like a glove. Everything's fine, right? Anyway, so finally, and then I meet a woman who becomes my next wife and a bunch of wives ago. No, well, she's a few wives in. And great woman. And she's like, all right, now you can. She's now all, okay, wait. No, you have to take care of your health. And she starts looking at all the things I'm not doing. You have to get this thing replaced. It's not right. I'm like, all right, fine. She takes me to the dentist. She got to go see the dentist. So I go in there. This is a new guy. Yeah. All right, because I already moved now, whatever. And this thing is still in there. Right? It's like etched in there like a glove, right? And so I go in there, and the guy's like, oh, okay, let me take an x-ray. He takes an x-ray. And he's like, wow. He goes, that's interesting. So I see you have this temporary, but it's really in there. I see the screw. He goes, all right, well, he goes, well, here's what we got to do, right? He goes, well, you know, we're going to have to, like, you know, hack this thing out, okay? Really? He goes, do you know what type of glue they have? They use. I was like, I'm like, what? He goes, well, I don't really, because, you know, I want to make, if we could dissolve it the right way, it'd be less painful. I'm like, what the hell? Then he goes, and goes, also, I can see if you could find out the type of screw that we could save some time. I'm like, screw you, all right? Yeah. Anyway, so he goes, the whole thing, he goes, well, listen, he goes, here's the deal. He goes, we'll get this done. He goes, I can get it done. I can yank it out the next visit. He writes that gun. Here's the cost. And he hands me a slip of paper. He goes, this is the cost of a new tooth. It was like $4,500. So what did I say? I said, okay, great. Yep. Let me think about it. I said, let me think about it. I took the thing back, right? And I went home and thought about it. No fucking way. I'm like, I'm not going back. This guy did the worst thing ever. He made, like, I'm going to have short-term pain in my life. All right? What's the point? I'm saying this thing is fine. What the hell, right? Anyway, so another year goes by, and I still have this thing in my mouth, right? Finally, I go to another dentist, okay, for, like, something else, like, whatever. Some other part of my mouth was fucked up, right? So I go to this other, and she does it. She looks in. She's like, huh? And she's, what is this thing? So she goes, listen, let me tell you the truth. Honestly, yeah, you could keep this temporary in there, but honestly, one day you're going to be, like, you know, in the worst, but you travel around, it'll crack on you, it'll get infected. I think it might even be infected right now. Maybe you have a lack of energy. I'm like, pull the freaking thing out right now. And I gave my credit card $5,000. One person did not know how to sell me a tooth.
Right. Right.
And the other one did.
Yep.
It's a classic example, okay, of a service provider that literally lost, like, as a dentist, that's a $5,000. He's probably, what's his margin on that? Probably 50%, I guess.
Oh, at least.
At least,
probably,
right?
More.
But yeah, the guy couldn't sell me a tooth.
Yeah.
Because he didn't know how to explain to me. All he did was said, okay, wow, it's going to really hurt, and I had to pull it out. And then, you know.
And you're screwed, and it's going to be terrible.
It's going to make me do work. Can you call and find out what screw they used?
Yeah.
I'm like, what the hell? Versus a woman, all she had to do was say, well, you know, I could just tell you this, you know, one day you'll be traveling in Africa or somewhere and you'll bite down and it'll crack. And then what are you going to do? Yeah. Have some witch doctor, like, you know, yeah, take out the rusty sword and take it out. And I was so fast. So I think it illustrates almost like this idea that, you know, no matter what you're doing, mm-hmm, whatever service it could be, whether it's teeth, medicine, chiropractic, or all the other, what are some of the examples of people that attend your events?
Gyms, social media agencies,
real estate agents.
Real estate.
Yep. Right.
Artists, people that just,
whatever it might
things
be, there's, mm-hmm, going to be one, there's a best way to explain your service, right? And the question really, I guess what you guys resolve is, how do you go about doing that,
and
right?
It's never the technical side of it, right? Because I feel like so many people have what I call student syndrome, where they just want to regurgitate what they know, the knowledge that they have, that, you know, technical components of, right, it, instead of, like, the second dentist did for you and actually explaining how it impact, right, your lifestyle.
Exactly, right.
Because that's what sells you, right? That you, she tapped into your emotional buying decision.
I don't feel good
decisions
for you right now,
yeah,
but
what
let's happens,
talk about
let's, the yeah, reality of what's going on there versus, like, oh, I could pull the thing out. You know, right?
Right, and we'll look at the screw and we'll look at the glue.
Yeah, in the old days where they had all the models, right, where you have to show you, here's the teeth. Yeah, and the over-explanation, yeah, like, I want you to understand it like I understand it. Versus, I want you to understand the impact that it may have.
How
on
great you're going to look after, right, it's done. So I, and then this other, like, for instance, other dentist, like, he just, I got sold these, like, veneers.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. And it was, and I thought it would be like, whatever, like, it was like 15 grand. I was really pissed when I got the bill. But then I was,
you were pissed
so,
because it was more than they,
I thought it'd be 4 grand. It was, oh, 15 grand. Okay. Geez. Like, and I'm a sucker. That's my admit. I'm like, I want to sell me the fucking teeth. I'm easy sell. Right? But I got them, and it turned out that it's one of the best investments I ever made. I love these. I always had nice teeth, but you know what? It's just to have, you know, as I get a little older, they get a little worn down a bit.
Yep.
And I got these new things. They look exactly as my old teeth. But I was so happy that I got them. But the thing was, the dentist, I should have gotten them 2 years earlier, mm-hmm, or 3 years earlier. So I think this mindset, like, you know, that would have been doing me a favor. If someone, yeah, could have gotten me to get this done 3 years prior, they would have been done me a great service. And I think that, mm-hmm, there's got to be a mindset shift from the, if you really believe in what you have and in what you do, then you owe it to the people who you're serving to get them to essentially take on the procedures they should be taking on, right? You know, electing what they should be electing to do, getting the cosmetic stuff they should be getting to enhance their appearance and how they feel about themselves. And I don't think that's mutually exclusive with doing the right thing.
Right.
I think it is doing the right
thing.
It is doing the right thing.
And I think you were the first person that I heard use the word moral obligation.
Right.
Right. It's almost like if I saw you and
how could you not say it?
How could you not say it? You're bleeding. Your nose is bleeding. Right. And I'm just like,
so how is that, right? So how could that be bad for someone, if you're a dentist, right? Or a chiropractor, if you see someone who's either they're hunched over, they're in pain, how could you not do everything in your power to convince that person to come see you if you truly believe in what you do?
Yes.
Right.
And I think that should be taught in school, by the way, that whole mindset. It's like a mindset of really, you know, of believing in the value you have to bring to the world and not being scared to say to someone, here's what I think you should do. And this is what it costs. This is the investment that you have to put out for it. Mm-hmm. And here are the benefits you're going to get. And when you look at it just logically, both short and long term, the long term and short term benefits are so much more vast than the few dollars that you have to lay out here, right? That it's a no-brainer, basically, right?
If they just taught one class in all of these schools on the idea of features versus benefits,
right, yeah,
and how benefits can validate the features, right, and just taught them that, they would be better salespeople. They teach nothing. Nothing.
Who do you think are the worst offenders of all? Into what industry? What industry do you think are the worst? Like, when I say worst, I don't mean I mean, like, who are just the most most disempowered? Or they leave school. Most of them, they really have a trouble asking.
Man, that's sad because we're chiropractors. So
you're putting us on the spot. Answer,
it's chiropractors.
The failure rate for I hate saying this out loud, but it is. The root of the problem, the failure rate of chiropractors for paying back their loans is around 50%.
Wow.
I cannot tell you how many chiropractors I meet in restaurants because they're my server. Or servicing me, like in the AT&T, I met somebody the other day, I was there, and he was like, I used to be a chiropractor. Because they come out exactly that, disempowered, disillusioned, and not taught the basics on how to sell their service.
I think part of it is a lack of self-belief maybe in their own, in the value of what they have. Mm. Because I think some people like myself, right? Like I'm a salesman, right? I could sell anything. Even if I don't really believe in it, I could, and I wouldn't do that ever again. I did it when I was younger, but I would never sell something that I don't believe in. I think that I think what happens at least in society here in the U.S., that chiropractors, like they're almost like that. I think that maybe they feel like it's not as accepted, and maybe they don't feel like
right.
They're almost embarrassed. Like they don't, like as a physician, as a doctor, like, well, I'm a doctor and I can prescribe medication, and because of that, I have the FDA behind me and all the drug companies who are so honest, right? Yeah.
Of
that, I should be able to deserve to make a very good living versus a chiropractor would be almost like a second class citizen of the medical community and some, and that's my own, but from what I grew up thinking myself in my own household with my parents, because they were so mad at doctor, they thought chiropractors were
quacks.
And it's not true. I know some really great chiropractors. In fact, after my surgery, I had a chiropractor that came to me 3 days a week with my shoulder, and he was like, you know, listen, the surgeon was amazing. I had the shoulder replacement, but he was amazing too. He did his job well, and they work hand in hand with each other. But there's got to be some sort of re-education at some point. I think it should happen in the schools.
Yep.
But if it's not, is that some of what you do essentially? Is there like the big mindset part of the equation?
Mm-hmm. 1,000,000%. Because it is chiropractors, but it's not exclusive to chiropractors. Right. Because it goes on. Here's what happens is anybody that graduates and they're providing a service that's expensive, they are saddled with student loans, and then their mind starts playing tricks on them because here's what they think. They think, I can't even afford veneers. So how am I going to sell it to somebody?
Okay, so that's a very important point, right?
Yes.
So they start thinking with their own. This is a problem I have with Stratton early on when I have a stockbroker who's 21 years old, doesn't have two nickels to rub together. Mm. How do I ask one to send me $1,000,000? I don't have it in my own pocket, right? So it's the idea of essentially not using your own financial situation to use your map of the world to judge what others can or can't afford.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Look at it in a different way even, is that I think that service providers make the mistake of looking at it as a value of trading time for money. Like, yeah. What is my, how much could my services be worth in 1 hour? Because, you know, I'm a person doing something, yet the value of what you provide could have a lifetime benefit. So it's not about the hour that you work. So if I'm a service provider, and if I was a chiropractor, I would not be talking about like, this is like, it's not like a 1 hour treatment.
A massage, that's where, right? Massage, it's 60 minutes.
It's right, it's so dedicated trading time for money versus like by coming to see me, what we're looking at is a 1 year program of benefits to you that are going to, and you know, whatever, it could be, I mean, I don't know all the benefits of being a chiropractor, but it goes far past just aches and pains.
Right. Oh, huge benefits.
Okay. And, and also just like it's the idea that it's not, if someone says to me, I can get rid of your pain, or I can, I don't forget the ethical or legal, but I'm saying, let's just say, okay, the value to that. It's not an hour of work. It's like it's worth everything to me. If I'm in pain, I'll pay $50,000 to have someone take away my pain. So it's not about whether it takes them 5 minutes or a month. It doesn't really matter if they take away my pain. The value, they got to link it not to the actual service.
Well, here's what you get taught in school is that the prospect only wants to know three things: can you help me? How much does it cost? And how long will it take? And we disagree with that.
I disagree too.
I mean, if you have something wrong with you, again, you have excruciating pain. I even say, put it in your in a son or daughter, right? If something is wrong with your child, and you find somebody, they say, look, Lacey can help you. She's the only person on the planet can help you. And you go to talk to Lacey, and she says, I can fix it, but it's going to be $50,000, and it's going to take 6 weeks. Nobody ever says too much money. Right. You figure it out.
Of course.
Or too long, right? But they are ingrained with this. That's what people want to know. They get slotted in. People only care about, can you help me? How long will it take? How much will it cost? And those are variables that are not that important in that world of providing a big value to somebody, right? I mean, if we're selling a cup or we're selling a table, you might be comparison shopping, but when we're talking about your health or something that has a massive need, you're not comparison shopping. You're actually looking just for the best.
And if you've already stepped into that office, well, we know that people are taking action because something's been taken away from their lives. It's not like, oh, I woke up and I had some pain today. It's gone on long enough that your life is impacted.
Sure. Yeah.
So really, too, the crazy thing about service professionals is most of the time when people are in front of you, they're already sold. Now it's just your job to unsell them, which they get pretty good at. I'm sure you've seen that. Yeah.
Unbelievable. So I think another good example of this, of the mistakes in, I've done a lot of trainings for digital marketers, right? Mm. And this was a company that was actually providing advertising, online advertising to doctors and chiropractors specifically. That was their sweet spot, right? And one of the big mistakes they were making as service providers was they were trying to say, well, but we charge you $1,000 a month, right? And then they're saying, and the reason we charge you $1,000 a month, and we're not really making that much money because we have to have the people in India making the website. And they're trying to equate what they charge based on what their markup is. Mm. No one cares about that. My question is, if I spend $1,000, what am I getting? What benefits do I get in return, right? So it's really about, for a service provider, it's not really focused, as you said, on features or like what you're making as much as what the value is that you're providing, right? Mm-hmm. Right. So basically, we're not going to stop now, but we actually now go to the audio-only portion. Mm-hmm. So if you're watching on YouTube, now switch over to either Spotify or iTunes, and we're going to get down to the really dirty stuff. No. Well, here's the dirty stuff. Ready?
Yes.
You both are chiropractors, right?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, you practiced?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What do you do? Here's my first dirty question. What do you do? I want to ask this to you, especially, right? You ever have like a really gross, disgusting patient show up at your office, like, and you had to, I'm a shallow bastard. I'm like, imagine a fat, gross, smelly, hairy guy. I don't know if there's enough rubber gloves I could put on. What do you do? Do you say, take a fucking chair? What do you do? No.
You know, here, I've been blessed in chiropractic because the work that we do. So we actually have a franchise that's called the Specific Chiropractic Center, and we own 16 offices across the nation.
Okay.
And the work that we do is very specialized, unique, where we only work with the top two bones of the neck. And so that's actually the only area that I have to adjust. So I've been lucky.
You ever see the really gross
dirty,
necks
sweaty.
The lights is jumping out at you. Like, oh.
I'll tell you a story. So we go down and we do outreach programs. So we take chiropractors to third world countries, Philippines, El Salvador, Mexico, and almost do like a Doctors Without Borders, but with chiropractic. And we get just people lined up for hours. We set up outside. We work with the government. And people will just, like, shuffling in line. And you just got to be quick. You got to, like, check their necks. And one time we had this person sit down and pulled up the hair.
Don't tell me.
Was
there growth with, like, arms and
legs? Oh, no, worse.
No, what?
It was lice. And it scurried everywhere. You could see it.
It was moving.
It was moving.
Actually, you said that before. I was kidding.
No, this is real. And it's really? Just, I mean, it's crawling in this person's hair. And you're there to serve and you're there to help. And
what you do? Dip that shit in sulfuric acid.
You got to go for it. What do you do? We went quick, checked, and sent them on. And then as soon as they left, just disinfected everything.
You know what they say, though? I hope they've never said this to you. Is they say, you know, Jordan, in order to make your adjustments work better, I really recommend before you come in, you just take a nice hot.
If you ever heard that, you're in trouble.
I'll tell you, though, obviously, when you go to one of those, like, those doctors without borders, it's like you're the poor, sorry person who's got, like, the growth that weighs, like, 74 pounds on their neck and wraps around.
You've seen that stuff?
Yeah.
At one time we went to an orphanage, and these children were, like, physically and mentally had a lot of issues. And it was the first time we ever went, and I walked up, and this kid looked at me and just projectile vomited. So I don't do well with bodily fluids.
I give you guys a lot of credit. I really
do.
I give you a lot of credit for doing what you do with that stuff, going into impoverished places. That's an amazing thing you do.
Thank you.
We shouldn't make fun of it. Oh, it's fucking funny.
You know what? And it happens, but
you know,
it's the impact and the benefits that we see in those individuals, you know, and the stories we hear every time we come back. So that stuff, you know, when you're in it, it's not as bad. But when you look back on it, you got
to
laugh at it.
Do you become desensitized a little bit, like blood and all that stuff that, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. You know what's worse? Not the people that are the impoverished that have, like, lice. It's the people that have a lot of money that come in, and then they're oblivious to the things, like, you know, so they have strong body odor. They, you know.
Happens everywhere.
That's because then how do you tell those people, right? They're not in a third world country, right? Hey, I mean, and they look right. They're dressed nice, but they smell terrible.
My second wife had a friend like that. I won't mention her name.
thought about it.
She's actually a really pretty girl, but she's terrible body odor. She'd walk by a plant and the flowers would wilt. It was, like, really bad. Okay, I'm dying to mention her name, but I just won't, because I'm a better person than I used to be. But anyway, I think she finally got it cured somehow.
Yeah,
I think it was like an exorcist involved, maybe, or a witch doctor. I had, like, a medical doctor. I think what you guys do, in all seriousness, is awesome. You have this event. Let's talk about the event coming up. Okay.
Yeah.
So, well, first of all, it's not just an event. Tell me about your whole business model, what you do.
So we have a membership group, a subscription group called the Black Diamond Club. So that's where service professionals come and we work with them. We have a weekly podcast, Facebook group, mentor them on sales, marketing, and mindset, sort of the three pillars. Then we do three workshops a year. So we do a sales, a marketing, and a mindset workshop. The mindset one is really interesting too. We do some deep dive into each individual's relationship with money and how that impacts your relationship. I think, you know, it's kind of a novelty in some sense that we're married, we're both chiropractors, we work on the business together, and people always wonder, like, how do you do it? How do you not kill each other while you're working?
We've gotten close, but no, I'm just kidding.
And then every year we have the annual summer camp, and that's the big one, and that's just a ton of fun. Bring in speakers. Here's the model. when you're in a profession, and I think in any profession, what happens is if you're a dentist, they parade all these dentists in front of you who are successful so that you could learn from those successful dentists. If you're a chiropractor, you look at successful chiropractors. And for us, we've always looked outside of our industry, right? Like to see what other people are doing.
Sure. Very smart.
Well, one of the business we just launched is a loss leader business. We partnered with one of the top ClickFunnel users in the world, and he had unbridled success selling flashlights. And so Lacey, through Jay Abraham actually, met him. His name's Trey Llewellyn. And Lacey asked, what would it look like to create a funnel to bring people into chiropractic offices? And if we can get that down, then to other healthcare providers, right? And it leverages a loss leader.
Sure.
And a loss leader is not heard of in healthcare. What are you loss leading on, right? And so we like to bring in people like yourself who can teach us from your experience, and then how can we apply that in our individual services, right? Because service providers are not getting, and in fact, what's out there, most of the stuff, the content that's out there is aimed at, you know, just your quote unquote entrepreneur, people that are trying to make money on e-commerce and these areas, and the service providers don't really have a strong influence from the influencer crowd, right? You know, we talk with people like Connor Blakely is going to be speaking there. How do you market as a service provider to a Gen Z?
Sure.
Right? Because they have money. It's no longer are you trying to just market to their parents, but how do we convince them that they should get veneers or they should pay attention to the, you know, braces or Invisalign or chiropractic care, maybe even cosmetic surgery to a Gen Z? And a lot of people are like, why would you want to do that? Right. Well, because they have the buying power, right? And that buying power is shifting. So this year we're bringing in Eric Thomas and you, and we have a stellar lineup that we'll be rolling out below that. Right. PR, how to get media coverage, all kinds of things like
that. How do they find out more? What's your website? What's the easiest
way? The website is www.cometosummercamp.com.
C-O-M-E to summercamp.com.
Yes, mm-hmm. August 7th and 8th in Indianapolis.
Really?
A lot of people wonder why Indianapolis, Indianapolis. It's a beautiful place. It's a party place.
To come. Listen, I want to thank everyone for listening. It's a great episode, really, for the fact that it just goes to show you how crucial it is that you understand that in any aspect of life or business, your ability to communicate your message, the value that you have to give to someone else, without that, it's just really hard to move through the world elegantly, profitably, and to provide, give value to people in the way that you're capable. I think at the end of the day, if you have value, you morally have an obligation to spread that gift to other people. And that is the Wolf's Den for today. Come back and share this with your friends, their friends, your aunts, your uncles, your brothers. Everyone should listen to this. Take care.